Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 After. Thank you very much for joining us. If you've already been hanging around this morning, thank you for doing that, too. 800-531-3815. Toll-free coast-to-coast. My website is www.jbsba.com. I'm happy about Charles Cadillac being our guest. He's an old friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust and one of the smartest guys on Wall Street, no question about that. He's the author of Down 100,000, Fact or Fiction. He's a managing director at J&W Seligman & Company there in New York City. He's our good friend. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks. Great to be here, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Chuck, give us a little bit of a tour of where you think people ought to be with their investing right now.
Well, that's a question that, you know, really depends on each individual person. But let me, if I may, take a more general view of the markets. We happen to think that, one, markets are actually reasonably valued. We can talk more about why here. Two, that we think the economy is going to get stronger as the year progresses and into next year, and that's largely because of the tax rate reductions passed in May and retroactive to the first of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And three, we think one of the biggest risks to the outlook, the risk of a Japanese kind of deflation, have been largely dissipated by proactive Fed action.
Mm-hmm.
And as a consequence, the outlook is improved dramatically in the last 3 months.
Profits, corporate profits are picking up too, aren't they?
Corporate profits are picking up, and they're expected over the next year to increase another 12%.
And that's the first real—that's the first really good profit news we've had in a couple of years, isn't it?
You know, the truth is, I'm not sure.
Well, I remember just before 9/11 that we were already seeing more companies that were reporting losses than had been the previous year. That was in 2001.
Right.
That was almost 2 years ago.
I think starting in the fourth quarter of last year and the first quarter of this year, year-over-year improvement in corporate profits started to look pretty good.
Right.
But what you're pointing to another thing in terms of stock market, which is important, which is the number of negative surprises is going down relative mm-hmm. to those number of companies who are meeting or exceeding expectations. And finally, I think with the higher scrutiny, forget the laws, with capital markets, you know, sell-side and buy-side analysts, increased scrutiny on the quality of reported earnings. The earnings we're getting from corporations are probably scrubbed a little more than they had been
mm-hmm.
in 99 and 2000.
So you think that we can be a little more certain of the numbers we're getting now than we were obviously 3 or 4 years ago?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the games have been reined in, and
mm-hmm.
and obviously the illegal behavior, although there's another allegation about HealthSouth,
mm-hmm.
I think people have been chastened
mm-hmm.
and are doing a better job.
Is Sarbanes-Oxley helping at all? That's the bill, folks, that Congress passed to really get into the business of managing the accounting and the oversight of the auditing of these companies. Has Sarbanes-Oxley helped, you think?
Well, I think it's problematic at this time. Clearly, the need for certification, the chief executive, chief financial officer, certifying, signing their name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something happens when you sign your name on a document. You just take it a little more seriously. I think that's all very positive. There's a lot of overhead. There are a lot of costs associated with Sarbanes-Oxley, which produce a little economic benefit, little increased security, but do make it more difficult for smaller companies to compete. And frankly, they make it difficult for nonprofits. I mean, I know friends and associates who are resigning from boards of nonprofit hospitals and the like because
mm-hmm.
of the potential criminal liabilities that they face for volunteering their time and expertise.
As absolute volunteers, yeah.
Because somebody in that organization may make a mistake. They could be held criminally responsible in some
mm-hmm.
cases. And even if it was just a civil case, the cost of hiring an attorney alone is fairly steep. So,
And that's this is an example where the government's pendulum, it always seems to swing too far, doesn't it?
Yes. Look, I want to be really clear here. People committed fraud. There's no doubt about that, and they should go to jail. In fact, there are executives that are going to jail under the laws that existed before Sarbanes-Oxley.
Exactly.
And I want to make it really clear that I am no way trying to forgive any of that, because it was very bad for my business personally. I'm in the investment management business. It's bad for capital markets. It's bad for freedom when people lie about their financial statements. Fraud and deception are antithetical to capitalism. But at the same time, layering regulation on top of regulation doesn't necessarily make things better.
Right. Well said. Well said, Chuck. Excellent comment. 20 till, right back with Chuck Cadillac after these messages. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. Thank you very much for staying with us. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we're going to be visiting with our good friend Bob Dillenschneider, who's going to be with us in just a few minutes. And he's also a friend of Chuck Cadillac. Chuck, you know Bob pretty well.
Absolutely.
Bob's going to be with us. We got some good things to talk about with him. And then after that, we're going to be talking with Renee Grant Williams and then Steve Martin. Steve's going to talk to us about improving the profitability of our small businesses. I'll tell you a little bit more about the rest of the week a little bit later on. Chuck Cadillac is our guest. He's the author of Dow 100,000 Fact or Fiction. Chuck, let's talk about the economy a little bit. You mentioned deflation.
Yeah.
Are you certain that we've whipped deflation, the possibility of deflation?
Well, you can never be certain when you have a discretionary, non-rules-based monetary system. But I think that the chances...
Tell us what you mean by that. That was a shot at the Fed, wasn't it?
Well, it's a shot at the current structure of the Fed, the institutional structure of the Fed, which is that they want to look. The Fed is making it up as it goes, and I mean that with full
respect. And
they
have been for a long time, haven't they?
Have been for a long time, ever since 1973, ever since we went fully off the gold standard,
right?
And really, off since 71 in some respects. And you know, they're sort of finding their way into the future by a trial and error system. And the reason I say that is. You know, a couple of years ago, we had a 6.5% Fed funds rate. Today, we have 1% Fed funds rate. Well, if 1% was the right rate, why didn't we just go there?
Right.
And the reason is because they don't know what the right rate is. Mm. They don't know if it's 1 or 0.75 or 1.25. So they keep trying one, and they kind of are finding their way into the future, creating enormous uncertainty. Two, the Japanese central bank has proven that targeting interest rates, which is what our Fed does, it can lead to a deflationary problem.
That's actually one of the things that contributed to theirs, isn't it?
It did indeed. And the good news is that Mr. Greenspan, for all of his errors that he's made, in November, in response to a question during testimony before the Congress, said the Fed has an infinite capacity to fight deflation. And when he said that, he did two things. One, he acknowledged that deflation's basically a monetary problem, therefore the responsibility of the Fed. And two is that the Fed has the resources and the wherewithal to, in fact, stabilize prices, which is something the Japanese central bank has never acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, the Fed has actually taken very purposeful action to head off deflation. You can see that in the growth of the monetary base. That's the part of the money supply it controls. You see it in the general rise in commodity prices and also in the rise in the price of gold since last November. And that steady increase in commodity prices and gold price tell me that we are not slipping into a deflation. If you look at what happened in Japan, the 3 years after the top of their market in 89, gold price fell more than 20%. In the 10 years after that peak, the 10 years ending 99, the gold price was down almost 50%.
Right.
And that was very symptomatic of the deflationary problem in Japan.
But gold is actually going up right now, isn't it?
It's up actually over 30% off its low of a couple of years ago in 2001. And that in itself is a very positive sign. I don't know of any time in history where you've had a generalized fall in the price level with the price of gold going up.
The Fed cut a quarter of a point in their meeting a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Did you think that was enough?
I don't think it's meaningful. I don't think it's relevant.
Mm-hmm.
What's relevant isn't the level of interest rates. What's relevant is the Fed meeting the global demand for dollars through open market operations, however they do it.
Well, I understand your position, but there are other people out there who watch this very closely and who get excited about what the Fed does, and who can contribute to the overall health of the economy. And some people were questioning whether the Fed cut enough. They should have gone a quarter point or a half a point. And you just say that it doesn't matter.
What matters is that the good thing is that the Fed funds rate, the overnight rate, is now once again below the two-year rate.
Right. Which
they had become inverted. Actually, the two-year rate had become less than the overnight rate. And the only way to keep the overnight rate above a two-year rate is actually for the Fed to tighten. We actually saw that in the data. Now that they've cut a quarter point and the two-year rate's gone up, that positive curve that again allows the Fed to, using its mechanism, to do enough open market operations to supply all the dollars that the world's demanding. The most encouraging news is the price of gold here is still around $350 an ounce. There's nothing magical about $350. It's just kind of a spot that says risk of deflation are pretty low. If the price of gold, just give you some broad parameters, were to go down to $325 or below, I'd become concerned again about deflation. If it were to go above $400, I'd then become concerned about a little bit of outbreak of inflation.
Well, Chuck, convert all this technical language and perspectives that you're giving us, convert all that into why this is good news for small business.
Well, price stability. The most likely outlook for the next 2 to 3 years is a stable price environment, inflation 0 to probably less than 3%. What that says is that business should have higher confidence in making investments today into the future, because one of the most positive environments you can have for the economy is a stable price environment. In fact, if you go back to 1950, the average growth rate of the U.S. economy in these kinds of periods is well over 3% a year, well over 3% a year.
Well, another thing, Chuck, that we can't lose sight of is the fact that small business owners have to have banks. We have to work with our banks. And banks who are concerned about deflation aren't good friends of small businesses.
Well, for good reason, because they can't lend against assets.
Exactly.
If asset prices are falling.
Right.
Again, I think the risk of that is going down, which means what? It means that you'll be able to get working capital loans,
right,
because
exactly.
Banks will have more confidence that the value of your inventories isn't going to be falling. You aren't going to be taking inventory losses and having a cash flow crisis.
Over the last few months, your bankers folks have been taking a nice little sigh of relief that the prices aren't going the wrong way, and therefore you should have a little more receptive audience when you call in your banker next time to get a loan. Tim Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. When we come back, I'm going to ask Chuck about all the people who are unemployed. What do we do about them? How do we get this economy going again? Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 Till. We're visiting with our good friend Chuck Cadlick, who is the managing director of J&W Seligman & Company. And your products are primarily mutual fund products, Chuck, and they're available to my audience through their brokers and financial advisors, aren't they?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you guys don't sell to the public directly. You sell through the wirehouses and some of those guys. So look for the J&W Seligman products. Give us a website, too, Chuck.
Seligman.com, www.seligman.com.
Seligman.com. Chuck, what about the unemployment? We've got 6.4% unemployment right now. That's, what, about 7 million people unemployed?
Yep.
That's a really nagging number that's politically is becoming a problem for Mr. Bush, isn't it?
Yes, and that's good. You want the political system to be highly sensitive to people not being able to find jobs and being thrown out of work. And we're going through a transition now, and there's three shocks that the economy has suffered. One, terrorism, which has made some things like airlines and the like less economically viable than they used to be. At the same time, a huge increase in demand for security people, like at the airports and buildings and the like.
Mm-hmm.
So in some sense, the economy is having to reorganize itself around that shift in priorities.
People who used to be baggage men are now checking people into the airport, things like that.
Yeah, actually, people who, mechanics or people who used to work for Boeing, I know, for example, are now working for the government, the TSA, and in the airports. Second is China. Look, China is now the third or fourth largest economy in the world, and it is changing the relative prices, the terms of trade for manufacturing everywhere in the world. By good and bad, by the way, they've also become huge importers of steel and turbines and semiconductors and the like. So China's buying a lot of things, but it's also selling a lot of things. And if you happen to be in an industry that China is selling a lot of things in, you have a very tough competitive environment. And there's nothing anybody can do about this. It's going to take 50 years to fully integrate China with the rest of the world.
I've been calling China an economic tsunami that is just only now just starting to wash over the rest of the world.
But let's remember, it's a two-sided. That is, they want to trade with the rest of the world
right.
So they can buy things from us.
Right.
If they didn't have to buy things from us, they never would have cut their tariffs. They never would have opened to the rest of the world.
You know,
so it's a two-sided opportunity here.
One more thing about China. Mexico, if you want to look at where China is hurting somebody, look at Mexico. All those jobs that left here, left the United States, those textile jobs and went to Mexico, they only were down there for 8 or 10 years. They're gone now. Many of them have gone to China. And Mexico is reeling from that right now.
The entire world economy is having to adjust for it. And anywhere in the world, you do not want to be a low-skilled worker who can't read and write. Because if you're there, you are in trouble economically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And finally, technological revolution continues apace. That is, the need for higher skills, intellectual skills, continues to rise. Automation is going to continue. And that, too, says that the need for a better educated workforce is extremely important, which is why I'm so pleased to see the continued emphasis and focus on improving the educational system in the United States, especially for those who are the poorest among us, to make sure that they get schools that can teach them to be in the modern world.
I was just talking to the manager of a paper company about a month ago, and he runs a brand spanking new Greenfield paper company. They just built the darn thing, and he has 400 employees. And I was asking him about technology. I said, how many of your people have to use technology in their job? He said, every one of them.
Every one.
He said, 100% of our employees are involved with some kind of computer usage. And he said, 10 years ago, this factory would have taken 800 employees.
There's nothing more important for our society today than to make sure that we find a way, some way, political middle ground, where we can get the school system up to snuff, a combination of vouchers, whatever it takes. That has to be solved for the good of our society. In terms of the unemployment rate, the solution for unemployment, of course, is better economic growth, first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And my analysis suggests that we're going to see increased growth in the last half of this year and into next year. And as that comes to the fore, I would expect the unemployment rate will start to come down gradually, back below 6%. And I'd love to see it back to around 4% over the next 2 years.
That'd be pretty exciting. Chuck, I've got about 30 seconds. You see 2004 pretty positive?
Yes. Barring some, untoward terrorist kind of act.
Some attack or something, yeah.
Attack or something, absolutely. The consequences of these, the positive consequences of the tax rate reductions that we've just gone through or just passed will become cumulative. And they will become more important over the next 18 months than they are today.
Well said, Chuck Cadlick. Thank you very much for being here. Good job today, and we always look forward to having you back on the show.
Well, I think this is the moment for small business to take that little extra chance, go to their bank, and start looking to a better economic environment.
Thanks, Chuck. Charles W. Cadlick, ladies and gentlemen, KADLEC, the author of Dow 100,000, Back to Fiction. We'll have him back again real soon. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.